Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a weekly look at the world of non-league football, and it's a bizarre world that we live in at the moment. Slightly topsy-turvy show, we're rearranged at last minute here. I do an intro to my co-presenter shortly, but first, let's move to what's normally our final segment of the show, a chat with the non-league paper, Matt Badcock, today at the break of the news that the season for Step 3 to Step 6 clubs has come to an end and the results have been expunged. So given the announcement this week, it's a big week in non-league football. It's time to head on over to non-league paper towers, and editor-at-large Matt Badcock joins us on the line. Matt, the FA announcement that this is now, Thursday afternoon, just a few moments ago, coming out to say that effectively the season at grassroots level for steps 3 to 6 has been abandoned, expunged, and we'll go again when we can for the new season.
That's right. As you say, we've all been kind of waiting to hear what would happen, what the decision would be. This seems to be the way to go forward. It's one that the FA have just announced that steps 3 to 6, as you say, the consensus is that 2019-20 season has been brought to an end and all record results are expunged. So no promotion or relegation, and no promotion into step 2. This is obviously all subject to FA Council ratification, but it's a sort of a similar thing that they've looked at in women's football as well. And there is also the news that when it comes to the FA Trophy and the FA Vase and the rest of their FA competitions, that they're reviewing all options to try and complete those competitions when it's safe to do so. And as they say in the statement, do all they can to keep the Wembley dream alive. So interesting, and obviously big news that's going to have ramifications across the country.
It's having ramification. I mean, we're just trying to let it all sink in as we're talking, as we're going. But I'm looking through the league tables, but particularly step 3, you know, clubs that have had fantastic seasons so far: South Shields, Worthing, Truro City. If you're a fan, a manager, a player, how do you think they must be feeling at the moment?
Yeah, I think whatever the decision was, whether they tried to if they decided to promote teams through points per game and relegate as well, then there would have been people upset at that. I think this was just an absolute lose-lose situation all round. I think it's always been a case of what the least bad option is, and different people have their own opinion of what the least bad option is. I mean, you know, there'll be many clubs who'll be happy about this, but you obviously do feel, and I'm sure the leagues who've made the decision, it's been their consensus, all the leagues, including the Eastern League, Southern League, and the Northern Premier League, and they kind of said that this was their position earlier in the week, that this is the way they wanted to go, without saying about whether it's going to be points per game or sort of null and void. But I don't think anyone would have made this decision lightly. It's just a completely unprecedented situation that we're in. A couple of months ago, we never would have envisaged that we would be sat here talking about that. We thought we'd be looking ahead to this weekend. I think it would have been the second leg of the trophy in the Vase, if I'm right in saying. You know, this is where we thought we'd be, you know, getting ready for a season running. Unfortunately, there's a total global health crisis, and football's, you know, been caught up in all that. And yeah, you absolutely do feel for everyone, all that sort of work that's been put in. But, you know, unfortunately, this is just such a difficult time. And I guess sort of everyone felt like decisions needed to be made, and this is the one that's gone with. And I expect it will be greeted by in some quarters with with upset, and others will sort of understand. But it's a very, complete, as I said, completely unprecedented time, and a decision that we never would have thought would be happening to the way this season's going to be ending.
Yeah, and you know, when some of the decisions I'm having to make this week is to whether to allow my daughters to have an early break from their homeschooling for lunch. This is that's a fairly easy decision for me to make. These are some of the toughest decisions ever, because it affects everybody. You know, we know all the effort that's already gone in for the two-thirds, three-quarters of the season that have already been played. And as I mentioned in the non-league paper last weekend, I know the guys that are making these decisions are doing it for all the right reasons. They're trying to juggle their own lives and everything else that's going on and make these decisions for the best for everybody. And as you say, they're never going to please everybody with a decision that they make. But I think that the best thing that comes from this is that there is a line drawn, and now clubs can know where they are with their players, know where they are with their staff. They can concentrate on keeping healthy and keeping their spirits up and looking forward to next season, which hopefully will be far more productive for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's like a really raw emotion at the moment, isn't it? Because, as you say, some clubs will feel completely hard done by and upset about this, and you know, you sort of worry now what the fallout will be in such a difficult time. And obviously I'm kind of a bit more neutral to it. I don't have a vested interest in sort of my team, so to speak, and you know, I can see it from all sides. I can see how difficult this decision would be, and you know, I find it difficult to know how it could have been anything other than the season finishing before you go on to the whole points of the game and null and void, because there's absolutely no way when we know when the season's going to start. I'm still kind of struggling to get my head around people thinking that the season's going to continue in May or something like that, or June. I was watching the news the other day, and someone was saying that they don't think this crisis is going to peak until May. So how can we even be talking about playing football in June or July? We just don't know when it's going to come back. And as you say, it's about clubs needing to move on. There's going to be serious financial challenges coming up, and we're also in the midst of, as I said earlier, this global health crisis, where many people are losing their lives, and you know, people are putting themselves in harm's way to try and save them. And I know it's difficult to think about that now when we're annoyed maybe that a team's not going to get promoted, but I think when football comes back, whenever that is, it's going to be a brilliant celebration. And football has got a very, very important part to play in getting this country back on its feet.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking on social media, if anybody's been on social media, there's plenty of clubs that are getting involved with their community and trying to support them, you know, doing food deliveries, trying to help local communities, even with just like helplines or someone to talk to. And I think knowing now that we are, you know, not quite the end of March, that the season is finished, it does give clubs the opportunity to plan, although we don't know when this new season is going to start, to plan that when we do get back to football, we can make it that proper celebration that we want it all to be.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing, isn't it? When it does come back, but there's a lots of things to go through for then. And I'm kind of, you know, half sort of, you say it sort of slightly reservey that it is only football, because I know how important football is, and you know, it's important in all our lives, and that's why we love it, that's why we watch it, that's why we're involved in it. But you know, football is going to have a bigger role to play in the coming months of you know, it's all getting back to normal life, and what a celebration that's going to be. As I say, that doesn't help you now if you're the manager of a team who just feels like you've lost out on promotion. But it's hopefully with time we can all kind of accept it, and are kind of sort of fearful of like, you know, how everyone will react now, because you know, we need a real sort of positive movement going forward. And as I say, I completely understand how people are feeling, but this is such an unprecedented thing, and whatever decision was made would be wrong for some people.
Yeah, and imagine us, querying decisions of leagues and league committees so early on in the season. Normally it'll be June that there'd be all this backlash and everything like that, but we now know where we're heading. And I suppose on a positive spin, it's the greatest pre-season that any club's ever had that's just gone behind us, because hopefully they can hold those teams together if if they were doing well the season that's just gone, but that hasn't gone, or how we're ever going to describe it. It's going to be a great quiz question in future years to come. And it just hopefully, although there'll be this negativity in the next, I'm sure in the next couple of days and also, you know, coming weeks for the clubs that were up there and thought they were going to get promotion, hopefully it will give some positivity to the nation that we actually know in a way where we're heading. We just don't know when we can get there.
Yeah, I think that's been the real sort of difficulty, isn't it? Over the last sort of week or so, there's been all this uncertainty of what's going to, you know, not only what's going to happen in football when the season has come back, but just this general uncertainty. I mean, you know, this time last week, it was completely different to now when we spoke this time last week. You know, now we're not supposed to leave our houses unless you're going out for basic essentials or going to, you know, work if you can't work at home. And that's all changed very quickly. This has all come up on us very, very quickly. And it's a completely unprecedented situation. And perhaps maybe this is also a period that where football can have a slight reflection and maybe come back a slightly better for it as well. And it's maybe the time where we can have the discussions around finances and around the money that comes down from the top of the game and everything that can come with everything else good that could possibly come out of this.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at social media again over recent days, that there has been a celebration of non-league football. I know you guys have got some fascinating stuff coming up at the weekend in the non-league paper. You know, we've had people tweeting about players or fans going to the wrong location, slightly mix up with their town names or club names, and people are realizing the camaraderie bit about non-league football, and hopefully everybody can come together on this decision and support the authorities that have had, you know, one of the toughest decisions to make beyond being a member of the government at the moment, and we can move forward. I know there'll be plenty of queries as well and answers still to be given. You mentioned about the FA Cup, the FA Trophy, FA Vase. They're still, you know, seeing if there's a solution so that those clubs can, you know, maybe still make Wembley for making those finals. But I guess there's also the question of, you know, red cards, any bans that have come into place. I know plenty of a number of players that have been celebrating this season that they've toppled club appearance records, club goal scoring records. I think these are all things that I guess will also be expunged.
Well, yeah, it's not something I've thought about so far. But I think in the past when clubs have gone to the wall during the season, that goals get taken off, and I've spoken to strikers in the past who are not happy with that at all. I think it's sort of, personally, I think everything should kind of stand really, and it kind of, I guess it sort of has to have that, maybe slight asterisk on it. But it's you know, I wouldn't want to be taking things off people like that. I mean, I think it's a hard enough thing as it is, isn't it? So, yeah, there's lots to do. There's lots that will be discussed in the coming weeks and months. But I think eventually the most important thing is that as long as many people come out of this as healthy as possible, and football comes back, and we have that celebration, because that'll be some opening day of the season, whenever that is.
It will be, and obviously this announcement has said that it applies to steps 3 through to 6, steps 1 and 2 in the National League. Yeah, they're still trying to align with the AFL, but there's no mention, obviously, in this about any relegations from step 2. I guess the likelihood is that they're going to stay the same and there'll be no relegations there, because again, this was a year of further reorganisation, particularly between step 2 and step 3, with I think 4 clubs down and 8 clubs up.
Yeah, there's a lot of rejigging there, so I guess that's to be confirmed. Yeah, I can't see how clubs will be coming down if no one's going back up. And the FA have said in the statement that the restructure that was going to happen, where there's going to be an 8th division at step 4, wasn't there? That's being deferred. So kind of, it says in the statement, it says the planned implementation of the restructure of the National League system will now also be deferred. So I'm assuming that kind of all comes under that as well. Yeah, it's sort of an incredible sort of period of history, isn't it? In non-league football, something that we never thought we'd ever see, I guess.
It is, and it's an incredible part of history, which I'm sure you'll be reporting about in Sunday's paper, which, of course, if people can't get out to their local shops and pick up a copy, they can subscribe digitally. What else can we expect to read in the paper this weekend then, Matt?
Yeah, that's right. We had lots of nice feedback last week from our first kind of footballless paper in the season. Obviously, we have it in the summer, don't we? But not normally in March, that's for sure. But yeah, plenty going on. Obviously, aside from all this, we're trying to put some other pieces in there that people who enjoy read. I know people probably be sick and tired of this lockdown and not being able to really get out and about. So hopefully, there'll be some nice pieces in there. We've spoken to Les Ferdinand. I think he can't remember, where did he start?
It's a small club in West London. Apparently, they chant at us. Yeah.
So yeah, we're speaking to Les Ferdinand. We've got a piece with John Coleman. Talking about his that Accrington team and the promotions that they had and how well they're getting on now. Taking a little look at the season so far in the National League. Obviously, as you say, they're trying to carry that on. We've got pieces with Sauber Thomas at Boreham Wood. Hopefully, Darren Eadie at Leiston, if he answers his phone in the next 10 minutes. And we've got a new feature starting up as well called Non-League Icons as well. So we're getting our first Non-League Icon, which is a really nice piece. Talking to a few people about a particular character in the game who scored a few goals in the North East. I'll leave it at that, and people can maybe guess where they're guess who it's going to be.
Well, Matt, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show in a fairly historic week. Don't forget, you can pick up the Non-League paper if you are out and about picking up your other essentials. If not, subscribe digitally and, just keep the support for the Non-League paper and the Non-League game. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thanks, Tim.
So step three to six, as I mentioned to Matt Badcock there, effectively every competitive game since July looks to have been, just a pre-season. Only the decisions on the FA Cup, FA Trophy, FA Vase are likely to alter that. I'm joined on the line by Dave Anderson. Dave, what was your first reaction to that news?
Yes, stunned, really. I don't mean stunned by the decision. I just mean stunned by the whole thing. Obviously, in real life, football's nothing, you know, when you're talking about life and death. And I want to get that out there first. But to talk on the show, I think there's three options, Tim. I think option one is the one they've taken, just to scrap everything. Option two would have been to divided the points or did it on current form or some sort of idea.
I've certainly seen some very mathematical theories and sort of, you know, like one of these long equations that you used to shun when you were at school. There were various calculation methods that people were looking at.
Yeah, one of those, or they could have held off and then effectively finished the leagues and say this horrible thing's over is by July. So everybody had roughly 9 to 10 games to play. Effectively, you could have went, well, we'll start them in, I'm using July loosely, say July, and we'll finish the season in August, and then we'll put the next season back for a couple of months. So I think that's the only three options they had. I think, in order of preference, the guessing game of trying to divide the points up through some sort of system, a rubbish idea, because we all know that football, anything can happen. That's why we all go and watch it. So I think they've done well to not bring that into the equation. The equation being the operative word. And I think so you're left with two options: scrap everything or delay a bit longer and see where we are. And if I'm honest, it's easy to sit at home, as we all are now, and go, well, why didn't they delay a little bit longer and see where we are and put next season back? But you have to say that they, at least they've sat down, made a decision. It is one of two real options. Then the third I thought was would have been foolish. So as much as I my own personal idea would have been, can we hold on longer and see if we can get the season finished later on? Would that have made it a mockery every bit as much as doing this sort of sums and trying to divide it up? I don't know. So I think a little bit like where the government are now, people be critical of decisions that are made at government level. At the moment, I'm going during a very difficult situation and I'm backing them. And I think, without being political, but I think I have to say the same for the leagues and the FA. I think I have to back them and say they're in a situation that none of us can be clever and say we'd know the absolute answer to.
So we've heard the announcement from the FA, and the tremors around the non-league game will be going on for many days to come. But the news probably hit our next guest harder than most. Top of the Northern Premier when the season was suspended, South Shields have been hoping for promotion to the National League North. Now that's just a dream for next season. To get his reaction, welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, joint manager at South Shields, Lee Picton. Welcome, Lee.
Hi, Tim. Thank you.
I suppose that we should start with asking how you heard the news and what your first reaction was.
The way we heard the news, Tim, was as everybody else, I guess, through social media. Look, that's possibly one of the most disappointing things for me and for everybody at the club, the fact that we'd not received any communication directly to the club whatsoever from either the league or the FA, which, you know, leaves a really, you know, poor taste in the mouth, to be honest with you. Look, the decision is what it is. We're going to have to deal with it like everybody else. But it would just be nice for the, you know, for the FA or the league or both of them to have you know, maybe communicated to the clubs first before everybody found out together.
Yeah, I mean, there'd been much talk about the various options and that. Cause, yeah, it's the only thing we could talk about because we didn't have any football to be watching and having a debate about. But much talk had been made about maybe points per game being used to resolve the end of the season. And I know there were some clubs that were saying, well, that'd be unfair. I mean, yourselves, you were flying at the top there. You were ahead on points per game as well. Was this the complete voiding of the season? Was this even something you contemplated at all?
It was, you know, I think we all understood that, you know, all options were on the table, so to speak, and nothing was out of the question. We're obviously bitterly disappointed by the decision, even if I'm personally not that surprised. You know, we're just going to have to dust ourselves down. There's no point in us feeling sorry for ourselves or kind of going on and on and on about it. We've, you know, the decision's been made now. If at some point it's overturned by any, you know, any chance whatsoever, then that's obviously going to be a huge bonus. But we're just going to have to get our heads around the fact that we all start again from a flat playing field at the start of next season, and just like this season didn't ever happen.
Yeah, Lee, it's Steve. I was speaking earlier on before you came on, and you say you've no dust yourself down and not to feel sorry for yourself. I am absolutely gutted for any football manager, especially one that's in the situation you are, because I think unless you've been a football manager, you've no idea how difficult it is to win anything, never mind a league, or be as far in front as you have. How on earth do you deal with the guys? Have you spoke to your guys? I suppose you can't even meet up to sort of drown your sorrows together because of the situation in the country.
Yeah, no, you're right, Dave. You know, it's obviously impossible for us, like everybody else, to get together at this point. Like most clubs, I'm sure we have a WhatsApp conversation going on, you know, across the group, and we've obviously communicated to all the lads about, you know, like what I've just said. We've got to accept the decision. We can't change it unless something happens in the interim period. And we've got to get our heads around being, you know, hopefully even better next season, and you know, making sure of it next year.
Sure. I at the start, I came up with three sort of the only three things I thought could happen. One was they do this. Two, the second option was that they made some sort of divided the points per game or whatever you want to do, which I thought was Mickey Mouse anyway, because we know how football turns. The third one I came up with was that they waited a bit longer, and even if you start back in, say this thing goes on to the middle of June, and you play your 12 games over from June into the end of July, and then put next season back where no one has kicked the ball. I don't know where it was financially viable or if it was, but and obviously that would have suited you much better. Had you thought about that or hoped that maybe that might have been it?
Yeah, certainly. I'm not sure whether we'll ever get any kind of clarification as to the reasons for the decision and or the timing of the decision. I think, judging from what you said, I think you're maybe a little bit scratching your head as to why this decision has been made so early. Especially seeing as other leagues still haven't made their decisions. Again, I don't know how this decision can be made when step one and two of the non-league system have yet to finalise their decision. I feel real empathy towards a lot of those clubs that have still got something to play for at the top end of the top end of the table if they go down the same route with steps one and two. I don't know how other clubs structure their contracts and finances, but I'd be willing to bet that it's pretty standard across most clubs at this level. And we just relied initially when the whole coronavirus thing kicked in, we initially relied on just speaking to our players individually, asking for a little bit of goodwill from them in terms of them deferring their wages until a point where we did start to play football again. All of our players were understood that situation and were prepared to do that, or even take their wages now until the contracts were up at the first week of May, and then would be prepared to play, whilst not being paid, if we were playing in the likes of, May or June or something like that. So I don't know. I know there has been a reason cited for this decision that centred around, the financial stability of the clubs. But as far as we're concerned, I don't know how it would have made any real difference as to the outgoings of the football club to get this season finished in terms of wages. And on the flip side, what we've now got to deal with as a football club is not only have we not been promoted, but we still got to play our players contractually, and also we've been denied the opportunity to pick up the revenue that would have been gained from the remaining home games that we had left in the season, and that is absolutely enormous for us. We were bringing in crowds of between 1,500 and, the last game of the season was over 3,000. That equates to, potentially over £100,000 for us across the four league games left. What are the FA or the league going to do about that?
Well, that's a massive point. And I think that this is... I try not to hammer the FA. I try my best at times not to... because people say, oh, here he goes again with it. But if I'm in your position... or your chairman's position, indeed any team in any league, no matter your top or the bottom, but certainly where you are, I would have thought that someone would have at least phoned you up or sent you a brief, look, here's how we got the decision, here's what we thought about, here's what we... at least give you an idea, whereas this is a bit like North Korea giving you a decision. It's like, we're suspending the league and that's it, see you next season. So yeah, I really feel for you in that respect.
There's been no consultation with us as a football club. And like I say, after the decision's been made, there's been no communication to anybody at the football club about the decision itself either, which is, it almost comes across as contemptible, really. It's disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah.
We spoke to your chairman Jeff Thompson on the show earlier this season, Lee, and he spoke with great enthusiasm about where he hoped you could take the club and yourselves as players and managers. And I see he's already quoted as saying the club will seek an appeal or take legal action. Have you had a chance to speak with him properly?
Yeah, I've briefly spoken to Jeff, and you know, as you can imagine, he's deeply, deeply disappointed. Again, you know, we've now got to weigh up, as have a lot of other clubs. We've now got to weigh up what are the chances of a legal appeal coming to fruition? Because, as you all know, legal appeals don't come free of charge. You know, they will incur, you know, legal costs, and
having been involved with a club that's gone through a legal appeal against the FA, I could certainly recommend the top lawyers, but it's very hard to win.
Yeah, well, this is it, Tim, and like I say, this decision's already cost the football club substantially in terms of its finances, and Jeff's got to weigh up whether he feels it's a high enough probability of that coming to fruition. What I will say is that there's obviously a lot of other clubs in the same position as us, and I had a brief look across all the leagues, across different steps in the last couple of days. I feel exceptionally sorry for the likes of Vauxhall Motors, clubs like that, who Vauxhall Motors have already essentially gained promotion this season, with 6-7 games to go, and they're now being told that it doesn't count. Got to start all over again.
An interesting point, actually, Lee, because we were discussing a few weeks back on the show that this season has been tighter at the top. Obviously, you mentioned Vauxhall Motors, Jersey in the Combined Counties Division 1. I know yourselves, are runaway leaders until suspension time. But this time last year, I think we'd already declared champions in many divisions. And you do wonder, if this was 12 months ago, whether this same decision could have been reached, having maybe even presented trophies to clubs that had won their leagues that now aren't going to exist.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, look, I've been through a range of emotions today. The way I'm looking at it now really is I'm both myself and Graham Fenton, the other co-manager at South Shields Football Club, we're both feel, just privileged to be part of such a fantastic football club as South Shields. We work with some great people at the football club. We work with some great players. And in the context or the backdrop of what's going on in the world at the moment, I think you've got to try and keep things in perspective. Of course, we're bitterly disappointed.
Yeah.
But we're, touch wood, we all currently have our health, and long may that continue. And I just want to say across to the wider kind of non-league family, we've become friends with a lot of fantastic people out there across many, many football clubs that we've played against. And we've had some great experiences this season. And I just hope everybody, gets through this really difficult time over the next few weeks. And hopefully we can all go into next season with our health, and we can look forward to competing again with everybody.
Well said, Lee. Well said. I feel deeply for you and for everybody associated with clubs that aren't getting the dream that they'd hoped for. But as you say, there's wider things to be thinking of. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Take care of yourself.
Look forward to
dealing with you again soon.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Tim. Take care. All the best. Thank you.
So with all this time on our hands, what could we be doing as football fans? Let's talk to a man who many thought had turned to the dark side when he gave up playing football and picked up the whistle. Now he leads Ref Support, the organisation that aims to raise the quality, status and benefits of refereeing for the good of its members and the interest of the game. Welcome back to the show, Martin Cassidy, CEO of Ref Support.
Hey fellas, how you doing?
We're having an interesting week, Martin. I guess the lack of football probably affects not only players, managers, coaches, but officials too. I mean, how's it working out for you?
Well, we're the same. You know, it's a common misconception that referees don't love the game, and we do. And a lot of us get committed to fitness regimes and keeping up to date with law changes or modern practices. And we've got quite an active Facebook page and a couple of WhatsApp groups where we're just swapping ideas and going through old video clips, and lots of clubs are putting up old clips of their games, which is really helpful, and we're discussing points and just keeping up to the speed of everything. But fundamentally, I think you guys will feel the same. I think it's recalibrated football to realise that in the bigger scheme of things, it isn't maybe as big as we like to think it is.
Well, that's almost one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on, Martin. Because we've now got a long summer. We don't even know how long the summer is. Certainly, with the news for step three to step six and below now, really the season's over. So people are planning for next season and the way ahead. But could people begin to watch back games? Could they start learning to think like a referee, if not even begin learning to become a referee while they're sat at home looking for things to do?
Well, as I put in my blog, you know, I played for a long time. I took up refereeing quite late, really, at age about 27. And I still got to the professional level as an assistant referee, and I still ended up working at Wembley as a referee coach and coaching referees all over the country. So I think I would advise anyone to do it. And most people who have played and take up the whistle, one of the first things they say is, during the course, they realise that half the time they've been shouting at referees that, yes, the referee was actually right and they were wrong. I certainly experienced that. And I think sometimes we can all be guilty as players, just putting a player's hat on at the moment, that, you know, because we played a game, you know, we're up to speed at everything, and clearly we're not. And I think it'd be great if players could sort of engage with the referees more. And one of the reasons I wanted to start a charity that was independent from the FA is that I feel that the FA aren't really embracing clubs and teams and players and refs together more. You know, lots of people say that, you know, it's not within the FA's interest for referees and players to get on because that'll bring down the number of cautions and the number of red cards, hence they won't get as much money. And I put a tweet up a while back, and the manager of Hungerford put a big question mark up because I said, you know, I wonder how much money the FA are going to be losing during this closure. Now, that wasn't me saying, oh, us referees want to earn money. It's us saying that I think sometimes money comes before a lot of stuff in refereeing with regards to players. And I think if we change how fines were issued with regards to taking away money and having another idea, maybe points deduction or something like that, I think people will realise that, you know, there's more effective ways than trying to control players and money.
Yeah, Martin. I'd like to go back to your first statement when you said that some people don't realise that referees love the game. I would say, as an ex-manager, I have no problem that they love the game probably more than most people within the stadium, because as a football manager, I've received abuse, but it's probably a hundredth of the abuse that the guys in the middle get, you know, from supporters, players, and indeed management. So I would absolutely say that's a no-brainer for me. I think they absolutely love the game. The thing that I was thinking about is that in this real strange situation where players have got to keep their fitness without training together, referees and officials would be quite used to training alone. Am I wrong in that?
No, that's right. It can be quite a solitary existence, really, and it's up to the individual to go out and do their own training regimes. And to be honest, one of the things that we like to advocate is some referees to engage with local teams at every level and maybe go to their training evenings and get to know each other a bit more and see what we can learn from each other. So, yeah, you're spot on.
And do you have any, like in the Referees Association, is there any, what's the word I'm looking for, like training regime, like a sort of a brief that you're given as to how to stay fit, where to be on a fitness level?
Well, in regards to the Referee Association, that's a different organisation to Ref Support UK. But speaking for ourselves, we even on our website, we've got different training regimes. Because believe it or not, you know, the level of fitness is quite high for referees. And I think what managers have said before, and I think it's a fair criticism of referees, is that some of them don't look fit during the season. And I think a lot of referees, and particularly assistant referees, can be guilty that they only train to pass the fitness test. You might not be aware, but they have a fitness test early in the season. And yeah, if you haven't passed the fitness test, you can't officiate. But then that's it. And we've always think that, you know, a lot of referees and assistant referees should have a mid-season test. So, you know, they know that they're going to be up to speed throughout the whole season rather than just getting ready for the beginning of the season. So you do... Lots have their own routines. We put fitness regimes up on the Facebook page about, you know, dietary issues is also something that we were tight on, and understanding nutrition, understanding, you know, drinking moderately. We don't say don't drink, you know, because we all want to enjoy our pints. But I think it's like everything else. Yeah. Let's do it all in moderation.
I think you see, if I was still in football management, I'd be telling my players to read wherever this is, because effectively the players are training on their own. It's difficult for them to, and to be fair, non-league players these days do an awful lot of their own fitness away from what you do with them anyway. They're so much more fitter than they used to be. But as you go down the levels, to have this Facebook page or this sort of brief that they could follow, especially in the next, we're going to say, what, 12 weeks, where effectively everyone will be training on their own. It'd be great if players could access it.
I agree. Anyone can go on our Facebook page or look on our website, yeah, and just look at the different things that we have. And it's very interesting what you say that, because it's like being match fit, isn't it? You know, managers say about players being match fit, and, you know, they always say about getting used to the Premiership and English style of football, etc. But referees are no different, and I think, you know, I think we're all going to have a bit of a culture shock when the season comes back if we're not all prepared, you know, mentally and physically well.
Yeah, there is going to be a big gulf there, isn't it? And while I remember, the website for Ref Support is refsupport.co.uk. And Martin mentioned the blog earlier on that he'd written, and this is a... It was a two-part blog, wasn't it, Martin, that you wrote just before Christmas and put it up on the site there. And it's called Putting Your Whistle Where Your Mouth Is. And just do a Google search, you'll find it as well. But it's interesting to read how you came from a player's perspective into football, because I think, you know, we've already discussed there that, you know, there's a lot of abuse that managers give, players give, and that sort of thing, and that's what I'd like to think, that over the summer, when people are watching back videos of old games, but they are having banter on social media and that we're actually learning more about the game and learning more about the rules. And I think, you know, your blogs are a great place to start. You mentioned your first game there, where you came up against someone that you'd previously had a fight with as a player, which again, I think, which probably shows the sort of player you were, and probably the sort of referee you've been ever since as well. But if you're a player now, you've just learnt that your season's over, you don't know when the season's going to restart. It may restart in, you know, August, September, who knows when this thing's passed. What should a player who wants to learn more about the game be doing in these coming months?
I think, first of all, thank you for your comments. Yeah, it was a bit of a transition from a player to a ref. But I think I've always looked at it, you know, towards the end of the season, in the ordinary season, when the weather's lovely and stuff. And you sort of get people, you know, I remember a captain saying to me once, remember in a couple of weeks you're going to be screaming out for the game. And I think if everyone keeps that hunger through the whole season, which I know can be difficult, about, you know, always wanting to play it in the right way, you know, don't look to, you know, don't be part of the blame culture is the biggest advice I can give players. Is, you know, we see it on Twitter where the default setting seems to be blame the referee, you know, if something goes wrong. And I think the only way we're going to do that is by us understanding what each other's, you know, needs and wants are. We, you might, I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter, guys, but we do managers forums where we put on free food and we invite managers from all levels of football in non-league, and we talk about, you know, what they want from us and what we want from them. Every time we do it, the managers say, when are we doing this again? Tell everyone to do this. Tell more managers to get involved, because we genuinely have never really had a conduit for managers and referees and players to embrace each other in a sort of, you know, non-emotive manner, away from a pitch, away from a game, and understand what we want. And we do this thing where we have an envelope, a sealed envelope, and we put it on a table in the middle of the room, and then we talk about what referees want and what players want, and then we open the envelope, the manager opens it, and everything we've discussed is on that piece of paper. So we always say, if you know what you want from us and we know what you want from us, why aren't we delivering this? And I think we need to learn about just stepping back a little bit sometimes, I know it's difficult, and understanding that without each other, there isn't a game. And I'm not a great believer that, you know, without refs, there's a game. Without players, there isn't a game. So I think we both need to understand how important we are to, you know, a good football experience, and realise how much we've missed it now.
Dave?
Yeah, I have a couple of things. I mean, I always had a theory, even in my darkest days when I was a nightmare with referees, because you said something earlier on about referees. When you look back on it, you might find that referees made the right decision and you thought they hadn't. I would absolutely disagree with that on sometimes, but what I would say at the end, Martin, is my way, I think the first way to protect referees is to say, as a football manager, you can go and see them before the game at 1:30, but you cannot talk to them again at half time or after the game until, I don't know, I'm going to say 5:15 off the top of my head. And on the pitch, we have to drill into players that the only one that can go to the referee is the captain of each team. Now, that way, that straight away would have to be implemented like sort of pushed on to people big time, you know, that this is the way it's going to be. If you don't do it, there's going to be a massive reaction. Because I think the first thing we have to do, referees, is take them away from the cold face and as much as people in their face. Me as a manager, and I've been guilty of it on numerous occasions, supporters pay their money and you've got to get on with that, because they shout at me, they can shout at you. So that's fine. And players on the pitch. Because I think that the bottom line is they're not bulletproof. And I think if I was on a committee making rules to help referees, that's the first tool I would bring in.
I think you're spot on, and it's really great to hear the manager say that. But I think also, you know, it'll be wrong of me to say that every referee, you know, is suitable for the referee that, you know, the game that they're playing and the level they're at. You know, sometimes, you know, the FA can be guilty of things, but I think referees need to understand that they need to be disciplined in how they keep up to speed at modern day practices, or up to speed at fitness regimes, like you said. But most of all, just admit when you're wrong. If you've done something wrong on the pitch, don't be scared to say, lads, I might have made a mistake there. And that can tend to just turn the heat off the game a little bit. Some referees will be...
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a massive one. Yeah, it's a very difficult one as well, Martin. I understand that it's difficult for them to say, look, I got it wrong. But believe me, and I can only talk from my own personal experience, that any time a referee ever said that to me, I backed off straight away, because there's nothing else to say. Okay, I even made a mistake myself once, you know, one of them. It's like, but the last one for me is a totally different one. Tell me briefly your opinion of VAR. I know it doesn't affect non-league football, but I haven't really got the chance to ask a referee about it.
It's a hard one, isn't it? Being born and bred in Liverpool, you know, people seem to think that we benefit more than everything else. But back and away from it, I've got friends who are on the Premier League as match officials, the select group they're called, and I think it'd be fair to say that it's not in the right place at the moment. It needs to be different. It needs to be more about the on-field referee making these decisions, or at least looking like they're making the decisions. You've only got to look at little sort of things that, you know, people who aren't into refereeing would not notice, is that they're all mic'd up anyway. 9 times out of 10, you know what decision's getting made. A lot of it is to sort of pick the clouds. And I think if they haven't looked at it, how can they're just going to presume that someone else has made that decision. And I think this video monitor the side of the pitch is a must. We must let the referee go over there and have a look at it. And he's going to know what's going on in the game, the little things that he's been managing that you might not see in a sterile seat up in Stokely Park. And I think it owes football and fans and managers and players a bit more than it is now. I think it needs to be a bit more transparent. I don't see why we can't listen to what VAR is saying to the referee. I can't think of any reason why we can't listen to the thought processes of everyone involved, which arrives at a decision that may or may not be, you know, something that upsets the crowds or placates the crowds. It's this sterileness that is created where, you know, you watch a game and the goal goes in and the first thing you wait for is VAR. You know, it's difficult, but I think it's the right thing to do. I think all we want is to get the big decisions right. We try that at all level of football, and if that can make that happen more often, then personally, I think we're all in favour of it.
And Martin, did you?
Yeah, do you know? Sorry, Tim. Yeah. Tim, hang on. Yep. I just want because I want to finish this, because this is a statement that you don't hear too often. I absolutely agree wholeheartedly with him. Now, there's something you don't hear me say to a referee too often, but I absolutely agree wholeheartedly. And I was interested to get your ideas. Cheers, Tim. I'm done.
That's fine, Martin. All I was going to say was speaking to those referees that are now in those higher echelons and dealing with VAR, do they find it an additional pressure? Because obviously they've learnt their game at non-league with smaller crowds, but certainly, you know, no less importance on the results. But is VAR just an added pressure on them at the moment when they're already the focus of attention and have some big decisions to make?
I think the concept in itself might not be the added pressure. It's the pressure of look at me now, I've got to do this decision. And I think what everyone was worried about was the over-reliance on VAR. And I think when it was adopted in other leagues around the world, it was almost, oh, let's go and check on a VAR. And that isn't, and I think referees would be right to say that a good referee goes on his gut instinct. That's acquired over many games from grassroots. And going to VAR might just take that gut instinct away from a referee that is so vital. And I think, if I'm honest, I thought we might have talked about tin bins, to be honest, because that's put more pressure on non-league referees than anything else, because it's another thing to deal with. And I think from what we're about, non-league side of things, I think although VAR is something that, you know, our match officials will hopefully use one day, they might be at that level, but these sin bins have caused a bit of trouble by either overuse or underuse.
And you mentioned that the additional pressure of those sin bins, obviously, you know, something that you're advocating is trying to get more referees qualified and coming through the ranks. But, you know, at the levels that the sin bins are being used at, sometimes we're struggling to get officials for those games. So to make it more difficult for them, and you're concentrating on the field of play, but you're also then concentrating on two benches and a sin bin as well. The word multitasking is often overused, but as a referee in the lower levels of non-league football, it's you have to be fully dedicated to the game, don't you?
I'll ask you spot on, Tim. And it's something that I think referees, again, who we talk to, obviously I wouldn't never name them, but they come to us and they don't really want to use it for those reasons. It's another thing. And let's be honest, we all go on about the extra 1%. Referees go on about the extra 1%. Players and managers do. When you've got someone in a sin bin, every manager's going to say, look, 10 minutes is up. When it's really 9 minutes, they're going to do that distraction method. You know, people will always just put that. It's another tool to use against the referee, as well as a tool to use but they control the game. And I think there's more work to be done on sin bins, if I'm honest, than VAR. That would help the majority of referees. I really do. I think sin bins is an additional pressure, although it's welcome as a tool. It's additional pressure that I think needs tweaking a little bit more, particularly because, I don't know if you've paid attention to it, but you can show a player two yellow cards and, you know, he doesn't really get sent off, so he doesn't get a red. So I think it's just maybe another coloured card and stuff like that would help match officials. But yeah, I think sin bins is something that, you know, we could discuss all night, really. But VAR, I just think they're both tools that when used properly, can really help everybody.
But Martin, just on the sin bins, was anybody out of any of your organisations asked their opinion of it before it was implemented?
Absolutely brilliant question, that is. Because one of the things we've done as a charity is that we want our independence. We don't want any money from the FA or anybody. We just saw donations and stuff like that. Yeah. Because we can ask questions like what you just asked. And what you find, mate, is that the referees come to us on the QT and they have really valid points and say, look, please don't say it was me that said this, but X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
Now, it's a bit like all the league structure. Did anyone from the FA really get involved in this new league structure that was supposed to come in with regards to stakeholders and players and managers? No, they don't, do they? So the FA seems to have the default set that, this is what's happening. There's nothing you can do about it. Now, interestingly, with this announcement with the leagues getting voided today, I think leagues will understand now how little power they've got and they need to do something about it. Because the question needs to be asked, are the FA here to serve us or are we there to serve the FA? And when you see what's happened now, where leagues can't make a unilateral decision on ceasing their league, I think that's a terrible indictment on football.
No, but I just think, Martin, I managed for, I don't know, 120 years. It was a long time. I know that much of it took a lot out of me. But your own career and the body of people who you represent. And I don't remember, and I speak to a lot of experienced managers over the years, I don't ever remember being asked my opinion of anything. Yeah, but I just think that, you know, I'm not saying Dave Anders, but I'm saying get 10 experienced retired managers, stick them in a room, ask them what they think of this and this and this, and then go into a referees, get 10 referees who are retired, who have had a great career, and go, what do you think of this, this, and this? And then go away and make your decision with a little bit of input from people, retired players as well. But I have never, ever been asked any question about any of it. And I just think that's the height of arrogance at times.
I totally agree. And you know what? For years, right, dealing internationally, when I've gone abroad to do games and stuff like that, and this is why I think you've just hit the nail right on the head, is that we don't get asked anything. We're the first people that's got to introduce it. First people that's got to adopt it, players, managers and referees. But they never consult us. And just look at what the FA is called. The FA are called the FA. If you go to Holland, they're called the Dutch FA. If you go to France, they're called the French FA. They've got the country in front of them, but not us. We're called the FA, like we're the best. And a lot of people don't like that. Why aren't we called the English FA? And I think that's a sign of arrogance that when the FA start looking at themselves inwardly, they'll realise that there's a lot to be done image-wise. And right back to a vote of no confidence in my House of Commons in that organisation. You know, is there any other federation around the world that has had that done? And I just think there's a lot more that can be done. But you said 100% spot on. It's another reason why referees want to talk to managers. You'll find that we agree on a lot more than we disagree. And that's one of the points we will definitely agree with you on, the arrogance.
Yeah, and getting the players, the managers, and everybody together with the referees, it's certainly at the heart of your organisation, Martin. So, as I said earlier, as we're rounding off, if there are fans, players, managers out there that think actually maybe a refereeing course might be for me in the future, how do they go about that in this country?
Well, there's a few ways. You can go to the FA.com and have a look on there. Well, the quickest way is whatever your local county FA, if you live in Hertfordshire, go to Hertfordshire, Somerset, go to Somerset, go to their particular website, which is normally the name of the county followed by FA.com, and have a look, click on the refereeing thing. There'll be a tab there, or there might be a front of page saying, be a referee, and just have a go. Just have a go, honestly, because it's totally changed my life as a player. I was terrible at least four reds every single season I played. Totally changed me psyche and made me understand that, you know, yeah, maybe I wasn't, you know, the biggest in the world that I decided to be. I think you can learn a lot. Just have a go. Have a go.
And if people want to find out more about ref support, it is refsupport.co.uk for the website. Have a search for Martin's blog, or two blogs there. Putting Your Whistle Where the Mouth Is, a search on any search engine, we'll throw it up. It's well worth reading, just to get an insight as to if you never thought that you could be a referee, then maybe think again. Have a read of that. Think again. Martin, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. We could talk for hours, I know. But we'll let you go and go back and watch some videos of some games and hopefully speak to you over the coming months as football finds its feet again. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks, guys.
So that's it for this week. Thank you as ever to Dave Anderson.
Thank you, mate. What a week, yeah.
What a week and what a summer we've got ahead of us now, too. Thanks to all of our guests. A big thank you to all for listening. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show and Dave Anderson at Dave Anderson 78. Caroline Barker's at Caroline Barker and myself at Tim Fuelblood. Of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, all good podcast aggregation sites. You can find our archive on there as well if you want to listen to past episodes, and also take a look there too for the Non-League Gaffer Tapes. Thank you. Take care of yourself, folks, and goodbye.
JIBBA, JABBA.
Recently, our company softball team lost a big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.